Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. I am your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of Pitchlink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Our guest today is Mark Schaefer, and we speak with him about his brand new bestseller, Audacious, How Humans Win in an AI Marketing World, a book that Robert Cialdini and Philip Kotler have called a masterpiece and a bold, brave book.
Competency doesn't cut it. If you are merely competent, you're vulnerable. If you're merely competent, you're ignorable. Because AI is competent. It's more than competent. So this is a book about digging deep and really evaluating the truly human, uniquely human aspects of marketing that we need to leverage in the future.
Mark Schaefer is a globally recognized author, keynote speaker, futurist, and business consultant who blogs at Grow, one of the top five marketing blogs in the world. He teaches graduate marketing classes at Rutgers University and has written 10 best-selling books. His many global clients include Pfizer, Cisco, Dell, Adidas, and the US Air Force. He has been a keynote speaker at prestigious events all over the world, including SXSW, Marketing Summit Tokyo, and the Institute for International and European Affairs. Mark has appeared as a guest on media channels such as CNN, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, and CBS News. Fun facts about Mark. In graduate school, Mark studied for 3 years under the legendary Peter Drucker, and Mark has 7 patents. Now, on to this truly insightful session with Mark W. Schaefer. Mark, welcome back to Bits About Books. The last conversation was fascinating when we spoke about community being the last moat. And I'm really excited to talk to you about this one, not only because it touches, I think, the very basics of what we used to do once and how far we have drifted from that, but also because your trailer was amazing.
Oh, yeah. My little movie trailer, yeah.
That was nice. It's really nice. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to see you again.
What actually happened post writing the book on community being the last moat? What actually sort of triggered this one? Because was it something that was sort of fomenting for a while, or is this something you said, no, I think it's important to call this out?
Yeah, it's well, a little bit of both. So if you look at the trajectory of my career, it's really been about researching and writing and speaking about how do we stand out as the signal above the noise. Yeah. And we live in a very busy world. You know, I think whether you work for a big company, if you work in marketing, if you're an entrepreneur or even a solopreneur, a big part of your job is needing to be heard, needing to be seen, needing to be discovered. And rising above this wall of noise that we face every day has become even more difficult. I wrote a very influential blog post in 2014 called Content Shock, more or less unveiling this idea that content isn't a novelty anymore. In the early days of the web, if you had a blog, if you did a video series, you could build an audience just because not that many people were doing it. And then as more and more people caught on, then it became harder to stand out. Well, today we've added artificial intelligence to the mix, which is sort of like weaponized content in a way. We have these bots that can produce endless content, you know, day by day by day without ever, you know, getting tired or having a day off. And so the problem becomes more extreme. And so this is definitely an issue that has been around for a while. And it's an issue that always has been close to my heart and to my mind. I think the thing that triggered the writing of this book is that issue, this difficulty in marketing, combined with this existential issue of where do we fit in this AI world? We have artificial intelligence nipping at the heels of our skill sets and sometimes nipping at our careers. We're already starting to see some job loss due to artificial intelligence. And so, you know, this has been something I've been thinking a lot about, studying a lot about, and I needed to write about it. And I needed to do it in a way that didn't sugarcoat the problem. This is not a book that says, hey, everything's going to be okay. It's quite the opposite. The theme of the book is competency doesn't cut it. If you are merely competent, you're vulnerable. If you're merely competent, you're ignorable. Because AI is competent. It's more than competent. So this is a book about digging deep and really evaluating the truly human, uniquely human aspects of marketing that we need to leverage in the future.
Yeah, that's fascinating, and that raises so many thoughts. Before I sort of get into the making of the book, how you actually went about doing it, I have a question. I really wanted to ask you this. What is marketing? And are we sort of caught up in this whole revenue generating exercise? Have we completely meshed marketing and sales and we are sort of looking at a gruel which we can't recognize at all?
Well, it's an interesting question. And I like that question because I think it is appropriate to reevaluate what the heck we're doing here. You know, so marketing creates customers. That's the simplest way to talk about it is that, you know, Peter Drucker famously said that the most important things are in a company are marketing and research and development. Everything else is overhead. Because if you don't have customers, you don't have a business. And if you're not creating new products and services to serve your customers, then you're going to become obsolete. And I agree with him that marketing is very, very important. And I think the reason why I like your question now is for two reasons. Number one is I think a lot of businesses have become intoxicated with this idea as like marketing as performance art, where we need to perform on TikTok or whatever. And I'm not saying don't do that, but I'm saying let's step back and reflect. Are we creating customers? Are we creating customers? Or are we just creating content because we're afraid not to? Is it random acts of content, right? Are we really focused on the goal here? The other reason I like your question is because there are really two different types of marketing. One is performance marketing, which is advertising and SEO. It's pretty easy to measure. You put money in and you can see the money coming out. The second type of marketing is brand marketing. And this is strategic marketing that over time separates you from your competitors. Because instead of fighting for market share with advertising and coupons and discounts and trying to shout louder, you establish meaning with your customers that sort of can withstand the onslaught of deals and advertising tips and tricks. So, you know, there's lots of examples, of course, but, you know, one that I think a lot of is easy to understand for a lot of people is Patagonia. I mean, Patagonia is a very strong emotional connection with customers. When you hear the word Patagonia, you immediately think of, you know, corporate responsibility and responsible outdoor recreation. And everything they do supports that. They live it, they breathe it every single day. It's not to say they don't make mistakes along the way, but their heart and the DNA of the company is always in the same place. And for that reason, customers are willing. It's as you said, it's a moat, right? Customers are willing to be patient with them. They're willing to stick with them. They're willing to advocate for them. They belong to the brand. They're part of their community. They're willing to pay even a little more, even though it's not the most beautiful clothing. It's not maybe the most inexpensive clothing, but it stands for something. And that's what brand marketing is about. So I think for those two reasons, number one, you know, people have been sort of, you know, creating content kind of mindlessly, and they've lost their way in terms of creating customers, and, you know, becoming too obsessed with the performance piece of this, you know, the SEO and all the analytics, that we've kind of lost the heart and soul of brand marketing in many ways. And so this book is in a way a wake up call to say, you know, just stop and think about what you're doing and how can we take a fresh look at this.
Yeah, it's so nice you say this, because when the reason I asked what is marketing and why I got into this at all is because I think this was a way to reclaim what was originally marketing. Yeah. and its relevance has not gone anywhere. It's just that we are trying to find shortcuts and silver bullets like for everything else, and trying to figure out, can I correlate this to a dollar?
And there's this larger issue, which is sort of like the foundational problem explained in the book, that because of the obsession with performance marketing, and there is a place for it. I'm not anti-performance marketing at all. But and we also have this historical traditional infrastructure in advertising and marketing that rewards boring. So we're afraid to we're afraid to shake things up. We're afraid of losing a customer. We're afraid of losing our job. We're afraid of being criticized. Afraid of becoming Bud Light and losing market share over one Instagram post. We love things like television advertising because we can win awards, and the advertising agency is an important multi-billion-dollar industry that sort of wants to keep things in one way. This is another issue that my book addresses, is that this is a time where we need to be bold to stand out. We're in this pandemic of dull, and we have to reflect, is our marketing and advertising boring? Because, there's a legal reason for it, or is it because of fear? And my challenge is if you're boring just because you're doing what everybody else does, because this is the way the industry has already done it, then it's time to reevaluate where you are and where you need to go, and the role of fear in your organization and your industry.
Absolutely. Before we actually, this is a good segue for me to get into the book, but I still would like to talk to you about your process of actually putting this together. Obviously the South by Southwest example, you are there, you saw something happening, and it connects in your head, well, this is one of those things that I've been thinking about, so to say.
Yes.
How did you actually go about planning the book, doing the research, and finally structuring it the way that you did structure it?
Yeah. So, again, the whole issue of how do we become the signal against the noise has been a theme of my work. And as I said, this has really been amplified by the issues that we face with AI, both in terms of AI is creating more and more content, and because of the existential issues to our careers. So, you know, I had this experience when I was at this big South by Southwest conference in Austin, sort of a global gathering of thought leaders. It attracts 300,000 people from all around the world. And, you know, I was having dinner with friends after a long day, and people started to get up and slowly leave the restaurant. It was surreal, almost like I was in a Stephen King movie or something. And my back was to the door, and I turned around to see what is going on. And everybody was standing on the sidewalk. And so my two friends and I left our hot food and our cold drinks to go step outside. And up in the sky was a drone show that was an advertisement for a new television program. Now, I mean, drone shows are a little more common today, but 3 or 4 years ago, this is the first time we had seen anything like this. And after the story, this animation, this story in the sky was over, it ended with the drones forming a QR code, which people were then clicking to see a cinematic trailer for this television show. Well, this experience, and then I even recorded, like, my friends and I took a selfie with a QR code in the background. And I became obsessed with this. I couldn't get this out of my mind because I went through this mental challenge that if someone came to me and said, Mark, we want you to create a story, a marketing narrative, an advertisement so great that people would leave their food in a restaurant to see it. Not just see it, but record it and share it with their friends all over the world. Could you do it? And the answer is no, I couldn't. This was something exceptional. This was something audacious. And so I did some research to find out who was behind this. Who did this? And I found out it was an agency that I had long admired for their very bold activations and ideas. And I called up the president of the company and I said, you know, I've got this idea and I want to know your process. You know, is it scalable? Are there ideas here? Is there a pattern that any business could use to rise above the noise? I want to come to your office. I want to learn everything. I want you to share all your secrets, you know, and then I'm going to put it in a book. What do you think? He said, absolutely. And this led me on a winding path to meet with some of the greatest creative minds in the world. And again, they shared their ideas and they put it in the book. Now, in terms of the actual process, when I made my initial call to Giant Spoon, the agency behind this drone show, you know, I told them I had this idea for a book, but after I thought about it for a few months, I wasn't ready. You know, for me to write a book, it's a big commitment. It's a big risk. It's the biggest risk to your personal brand you can ever make because you can't take it back like a tweet or a blog post. And this becomes part of your legacy. Yeah. I needed to make sure I was right. You know, I had some ideas about this pattern that I was sort of seeing, that there is a process to create disruptive marketing. So I told him, I'm not ready. And I sat on it for about a year and met other people and talked to other people. And then I was ready. And so, you know, my process is I outline the book. I create what I think will be, you know, the 10 or 12 chapters in the book. I think this book actually ended up having like 19 chapters, yeah, something like that. And then I create an Evernote file, an electronic file for each chapter. And then for about 9 months or so, I just let the book come to me. I look at examples and case studies and statistics and interviews and say, oh, that would be great for chapter three. That would be great for chapter six. That would be great for chapter one. And then when it's time to write, you open up these files and you're not facing, you know, a blank screen.
Right.
You've got all the data and the stories ready to go to weave it into the book.
How long did the actual writing take you?
About a year. Yeah. So from the process of when I first had the idea and proposed it to Giant Spoon to the time the book came out, it was almost 4 years.
And you were in the meantime, you're already busy with your consulting. So what was the kind of time? When were you writing? The weekends or every day, or what was that?
Well, once I commit to writing, I try to do it every day.
Okay.
And the reason is, the number one reason why people don't finish a book when they start writing it is because they stop and start. Now, you can do that with a blog post, you know, because it's 1,000 words. But when you're creating a 50 or 60,000 word book, every time you stop and start, you have to reorient yourself as to where you were in the process. You have to like almost read where you've been to think, okay, where was I? What stories have I used? And it's very disheartening. It's very time consuming. So my style is I'll do it all at once. You know, you got to write continuously, you know, get that first draft out and then refine.
Wonderful. So your first chapter is you call it a rant. So why don't we start with that and set the tone for this conversation?
Well, I think the best way to write a book is to, you've got to sort of spell out what is the problem. Mm. What is the purpose of this book? What are we going to solve? And, you know, I've been in marketing, let's say, several decades. And I can say with some authority that this is the hardest time ever to be in marketing, where the world is fragmented. Media channels are fragmented. Many people, especially young people, are moving away from us and our messages. They pay extra for channels that don't just show them ads. They're hiding themselves in communities where we can't really see what they're doing or what they're saying. We've got AI taking all of our content. Our content is the glue that holds AI together. And what do we get out of it? Nothing. No money, no attribution. And then you've got this idea that how do we stand out above this wall of noise? So you know, marketing is a complex process, but the first step has to be awareness, and our ability to create awareness with our customers is going down every month. So, and then I talk a little bit about this revelation of how bad of a job we're doing with marketing. And I refer to this research that was coordinated by a company in the UK called System One. And they exposed human beings to about 60,000 advertisements to measure their emotional response. And about 2/3 of the advertising, whether it's B2B or B2C, had like no emotional impact whatsoever. It was just a blank. Well, the researchers were astounded that the marketing was so ineffective. So they dreamt up the most boring thing they could think of, a cow chewing grass. And they made a video of a cow chewing grass, and they tested that in the same system. And the emotional response to a cow eating grass was about the same as all marketing and advertising. And if there was a CEO of advertising across the world, that person would be fired immediately. It's so bad. It's just terrible. So the rant in the beginning of the book sets the stage to say marketing is harder than ever. We've got all these problems. We're fighting against awareness. And then on top of everything else, all this money we're putting into marketing and advertising, it's just dull.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this whole idea about everybody is a creator and every company is a media company, this whole notions that one of the things that you touched in the beginning, that the idea that if you just do content, you are well on your way to doing something with your brand. And it is such a lucrative, easy to do thing. And with AI, that people embrace and embrace this idea and they don't really pay attention to what is the output of that process.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
What is marketing? You're creating a story about your brand. So what is that? Well, it's the narrative. It's where you tell it and it's who tells it. So if you disrupt one of those three things, you've got a chance to stand out because you're doing something that nobody's ever done before.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it. So obviously, you are talking of multiple kinds of disruption here, right? You're talking of the space, the format, the narrative, the tools. So walk us through these disruptions that are necessary, the destruction that is necessary possibly, before you can create what you think can stand out. Signal against the noise.
So as I went on this journey and examined who are the people out there that are really doing amazing work that is standing out, I found that there were three sort of sources of this disruption. So what is marketing? You're creating a story about your brand. So what is that? Well, it's the narrative, it's where you tell it, and it's who tells it. So if you disrupt one of those three things, you've got a chance to stand out because you're doing something that nobody's ever done before. So for example, telling a story in the sky, that's, if you said, okay, well, we've got a new TV program and, you know, you might think, okay, well, you know, we'll maybe take out some Facebook ads or maybe we'll take out some television ads. And, you know, that's sort of not disruptive. That's what everybody does.
Yeah.
But, you know, in Giant Spoon's process, it's like, okay, we've got this opportunity where we've got 300,000 thought leaders, you know, in this city that has a population over 1 million people. You know, how can we reach as many of these social media crazed people as possible? And they told this story in the sky. So that was something disruptive. And I want to emphasize that I've been very careful in this book to have a very diverse number of examples and case studies. So you might be thinking, oh, well, I don't have the money to do a drone show. There's lots of examples in the book where you can disrupt these three aspects of marketing with very low budget. One of my favorite stories is a company called Litograph. It's a company that will take the text of famous books and put the whole book like on a t-shirt or a blanket. It's something that the book lovers would enjoy, right? So what they did is they created temporary tattoos for every sentence of famous books. So for example, it might be Alice in Wonderland. And then they gave out these temporary tattoo sentences to all of their fans. The fans put the temporary tattoo on a body part, took a picture, and then sent it back. And so you can read the whole book on body parts. I think they've done this with 7 or 8 different books now. So, I mean, that's an example of telling a story in a different place. Now, the second one is, how do we disrupt the story itself? How do we disrupt the narrative? And one of the themes in this, I call it the act of the book. I've got these three main acts of the book, is breaking taboos. You know, meaning that we sort of follow the same rules year after year after year after year after year without ever really questioning it or challenging it. And so eventually everything looks the same. I'll give you a quick example. I was on an advisory committee for a big pharma company. And we were looking at new ways to use social media. And so we had this committee, and there was a lawyer in this meeting. And I had read all the laws and all the regulations of what they could do and what they couldn't do. But everything we proposed, the lawyer just said, no, 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 no. And I got so frustrated, I blurted out, have you even read the rules? Have you even read the laws? And it was sort of embarrassing in the moment, but it ended up sort of being a breakthrough because they looked at, what are the rules that we've been following? Are they real? Or has this just become part of our culture to say no to everything because we're afraid of changing? And so this is a part of the book where we look at, you know, pushing the edges in a different way, not in a way that's reckless, not in a way that's illegal, not in a way that's offensive. But an example would be the fastest growing beverage brand right now. It's not available in most parts of the world, but in America, it's Liquid Death. So this is water in a can. Now, one of the first lessons I ever remembered from my college days in marketing was the lesson, never associate your brand with death. And this is a brand that seemingly is doing everything wrong. They call their brand Death. Their company mascot is this horrific looking character called Murder Man. They're selling it in cans where everybody else is selling it in plastic or something clear. Their water is supposed to be clear and wholesome and, you know, natural. And, you know, they're just kind of going the opposite way. And their advertising is absolutely just off the wall. It makes you cringe. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, how could they do that? And yet it's propelling the brand because the world is ready for something different. The whole water market, what is standing out in the water market? Nothing. It's all the same. And, you know, and a key idea from the CEO and founder of Liquid Death, he said, you know, there is nothing we can do to our product to differentiate over Coke or Pepsi products. Whatever we would do, a new flavor, a new ingredient, they could immediately copy it. And they have more money than us and more distribution than us. And there's no way we could compete. The only thing we have is our brand. That's the only thing they can't touch. And so they're disrupting through this by breaking taboos. And the third aspect is the storyteller. And we have plenty of research to show that trust in businesses, brands, and advertising has declined for more than a decade. Chances are people do not believe your ads. If they see them at all, they don't believe them. And so we have to think about, how do we create something in our marketing? A story, an idea, an activation, an experience that is so compelling, so interesting, so relevant, so unmissable that people can't wait to talk to other people about it, because that is how sales happen today. That is what is believed. We may not believe in that, but we believe each other. And if we can create the spark of word of mouth marketing, then that, and again, I want to come back to the original idea here. If we're creating something so cool that we're getting people to spread it, that isn't AI. That's something only humans can do. You know, another big idea in the book is this idea of creating awe in our marketing. This idea of collective effervescence that happens when you bring people together in a meaningful new way. And that, again, it's something we can only do. It's only something only humans can do.
Yeah.
So that's the story of this book, is to say, look, here are the places where AI can't touch us, and this is where we need to dwell.
Right. When you're looking at this, I mean, the obvious things about generative AI is that it is literally taking, as you said, content that is available in whatever form and ingesting it and spitting out something else, which may be good, which may be average, doesn't matter. But when you look 5 years out, and 5 years is a long time for AI,
yeah.
Where do you think is this headed, actually?
Well, nobody can look 5 years out. I don't think anybody can look 2 years out at this point. Mm. Even the people that are in the middle of the whole AI revolution, yeah. Nobody can really say what comes next. Mm. I think there's a couple of interesting mega trends. You know, I think for AI to really be adopted and useful on a personal level, you know, we talk about AI agents and this idea of AI, you know, making reservations for us or, you know, whatever. Well, that means we're going to have to turn over, you know, our identification, our credit card numbers, our passport information. And a lot of people are not going to do that. They're just not. And so there's going to be this demographic divide. But those who have committed to AI and those who have not. And those who commit to AI are taking a risk by being truly, you know, committed, you know, on a personal level with their finances and everything else. But the reward could be they could be much, much more productive and have a much more profitable life than people who don't adopt AI. And we'll have to market to those people in different ways. Another implication is that I believe that art will persist. Now, AI can create art, as you said. It can create very, very good art. But the art that we cherish comes from a human, because art is an interpretation of the human experience. And AI might be able to fake that, but we're still going to love a painting by our favorite painter, a book by our favorite author, or a poem, or something that's been handcrafted. And so this suggests that our marketing and our content will need to approach the level of art. It will need to include an interpretation of this, of the human experience. And that's a bold way to think. It's a very different way to think. But again, you know, AI can do a really good job being competent, or even being more than competent. And so I think we're going to have to push ourselves to create something that's singularly singularly unique and an expression of the human experience to rise above the AI pandemic of dull.
This is very interesting for another reason. You know, if I look at this entire conversation we have had and the examples that you have shared, it is somewhere about ideas, and I'll not qualify it being big or different or, but unique is the word, something original.
Yes.
And that humans have the ability. I mean, I'm not a neuroscientist or I'm not a brain doctor. I cannot say how that happens. But mm-hmm. the fact is people have original ideas. Mm-hmm. The question is, can AI start having original ideas, which is actually something they suggest would be possible?
Yeah, I mean, I think AI does have original ideas. And mm-hmm. all, so the new models can reason. I mean, when we first started using ChatGPT, it was just regurgitating material that was already out there.
Right.
Okay. And, but even in that respect, I think AI comes up with original ideas. Let me give you an example. So I wrote this book. I wrote every word of this book. But one of the ways I used AI was when the book was finished, I uploaded the entire book to ChatGPT and to Claude, two different LLMs. And I said, what is missing? And both of them came back with the same answer. It said, you need to have a chapter on measurement. Now, in my original outline for the book, I had a chapter on measurement, but I skipped over it because the book was becoming too long. I was becoming too tired. And yet, you know, it's basically coming up with this idea that saying you're missing something here. And so I went back and I wrote I worked very, very hard and created a chapter on measurement. What's an idea? An idea can be an iteration of other ideas. You know, the greatest innovations in history generally are building on something that already existed, right? True. I mean, whenever Apple came out with the iPod that could hold 10,000 songs in your pocket, that was not the first MP3 player. But it was an iteration. It was a great idea, but it was an iteration of other ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, Leonardo da Vinci, arguably the most creative person who ever lived. There's plenty of stories about his ideas built on the ideas of others. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so why can't AI do that? Of course it can. You know, it can look at what is existing and then, you know, interpret something new. So AI, I think it already can come up with new ideas.
So if that is the case, how do you then shield yourself from that as a marketer? How, I mean, if for instance, AI could have predicted and suggested that do this drone show while South by mm-hmm. Southwest is on, 300,000 people are there, and you should do this, and the agency which did it is also thinking about it. How do you then sort of draw the line and say, we can still stand out over here?
Well, so I think there are two ways, two things to think about. Actually, three. So let's go back to the first one that I just mentioned, is when our marketing is a reflection of the human experience, when it approaches art, okay? Right. And that means having the courage to add our own experiences, our own stories to our marketing narrative. The second idea, I think, is this idea of you can have an iteration of an idea, or you can create a disruptive idea that, you know, that's that's never been done, that isn't really building on something from the past. And if you look at the liquid death example, that's not iterative. It's not building on, if you built on successes of the past, you just have another clear water in a plastic bottle that maybe is, has some other innovation. So I think that's where human beings can still really persist and thrive. And I think another aspect of this is the personal brand. So you had mentioned my book about community, and I also wrote a book about personal branding.
Yes.
This idea of personal branding and community and audacious and how we fit with AI, they all intersect, right? Because last time I talked to you, we're talking about a book called Belonging to the Brand, Why Community is the Last Great Marketing Strategy. Okay. So now I've written another book that talks about new ideas about marketing strategy, but it all goes together because you can only have humans gathering in a community. You don't want AI there. Probably not anyway. Although I just came back from South by Southwest and I did attend a panel discussion where AI was a panelist on the panel. So that was something new. This community, that is uniquely human. Word of mouth marketing, that is uniquely human. Creating marketing experiences that create collective effervescence, that is uniquely human. Creating a personal brand. And there's a story I love to tell that sort of illustrates this. When ChatGPT came out, I immediately saw what a profound impact this could have on the world. And I called up Shelley Palmer, this famous tech analyst in New York. I said, what do you think about this? He said, I'm terrified. He said, I have blogged nearly every day for 15 years. I asked ChatGPT to write a blog post for me about this subject in my voice, and in 3 seconds, it did a perfect job. He said, I am 80% replaced. Now, on the surface, that does seem terrifying. But the more interesting question is, what is that 20%? And that is his personal brand, which is another part of the answer to your question about what is our role? How do we stand out? No matter what happens in this world, we will always turn to a human for truth and navigating, the future. Shelley is known. He is respected. He is trusted. He is beloved. He has nothing to worry about. AI can write his blog. But people will always read his blog. They will always attend his speeches. And I feel the same way. I have built up this reputation, which is why you're interviewing me today instead of some AI bot, because you have some element of trust in me. You want to pass that on to your audience. People are still going to read my blog. People are still going to read my books. I've even adopted a little badge on my blog that says 100% human content to assure people, this is me. It's me. It's all me. And it always will be. You could trust that. And I think this human presence in this AI world will be a very important, critical part of trust and differentiation.
The two examples that you just now used of the personal brand, yourself and Shelley, you are part, like including someone like me, we are part of a bridge generation, which has gone through the entire transformation of technology.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I can imagine that what you just said will be very applicable to this generation because you have gained your stature by doing work which was not in an AI-driven world. It was not an internet-driven world. It started long back and people knew you. A lot of people who know you are also people of the same generation. Mm-hmm. Do you see this replicable in the next generation when they are actually growing up with internet, actually growing up with AI, and will they have the same luxury of creating a personal brand in that world?
Well, this is something that I talk about a lot. I mean, I do guest lectures at many universities. There are universities that have assigned my books as textbooks, and so I'll volunteer to come in and do a Q&A. And one of the things I emphasize is, look, there's a very, very competitive world. And now, in many respects, we're also competing with AI. If you think about, companies have been built on units of human intelligence. So if someone who's intelligent about R&D, somebody that's intelligent about marketing, and as they gain more intelligence, they get promoted and rewarded and they get raises. But what happens in a world where the economic value of intelligence is zero? When you have limitless intelligence on almost everything, well, then your value is going to be about your perspective or your managerial capabilities or your abilities to innovate. And I think it's more important than ever for people to be working on their personal brand, to be known. If someone has heard of you, or you can demonstrate, I've created this content to build this audience, and you know, I have this impact and people listen to me. And that's the last line on your resume. Don't take my word for it. Click here and see. And if you make it through the AI bots that are filtering out those resumes and you actually get to a human, they will click on it. They will see, you know, who are you? How do you think? And I think that is an edge that students can have today. I think something that's exciting to me is the whole creator economy, completely built on personal brands, completely built on creating an audience where you are known and then having the ability to monetize that. That's a whole, I mean, having a powerful personal brand is like a whole career opportunity these days. So, and I want to emphasize, I'm not anti-AI. I think the young people today growing up as AI natives, they'll find new ways to manipulate this technology where it'll become a valuable skill set. It'll be part of how they're known and why they're known. So just as, you know, I wouldn't have been known without the internet. Thank goodness for the internet. I probably would have been a failure as a professional if I didn't have, you know, the internet to spread my content and build a brand. So I think personal branding is still important for any generation.
Mark, I will definitely publicly contest what you just said about internet and your brand and not being there if internet was not there. But that's okay. I'm sure you have enough friends who will fight for that to say it's completely untrue.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed the conversation. I hope you enjoyed it too. And I am looking forward to reading the book. And I'll stay in touch and tell you what I'm thinking.
I do want to hear what you think about it. I mean, the thing that's rewarding about this is I work so hard on the book, and you just never know till you get it out there. And the response has been overwhelming. I mean, really overwhelming. And I love people are sending me pictures of the book with highlights all over it. One lady said she had to stop reading the book because her highlighter ran out. Yesterday, a young woman showed me the side of the book with all the post-it notes sticking out.
Wonderful.
So as a teacher, that's great to see.
Yeah, that must be very gratifying. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed this. And
thank you.
Thank you for the great questions and conversation.
Thank you, and you take care.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.